Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay, bisexual, or trans man. If you have any comments you would like to make during the broadcast, or if you'd like to ask any questions of my guests, please feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Before I introduce my very special guest for tonight, I just want to mention to everyone that our healing weekend will be coming up in April, and it's going to be in Orange County, California. It's April 13th and 14th. It's going to be an amazing event, with a weekend of full healing, with all kinds of workshops and speakers and everything to make you feel better as you go through this journey. Some of the women who will be there will be women from other past events, because it's so helpful in your journey through recovery to be with other people where you don't have to say a word. Everybody knows exactly what you're going through and exactly how you feel. If you are interested in joining this unbelievably wonderful event this year, because this will be our best one yet, in beautiful California, just send me a note at bonkay@aol.com and put down Healing Weekend in the subject box, and I'll be happy to get back to you with information about it. So without much further ado, I'd just like to introduce my wonderful guest for tonight. He's a man who I was fortunate enough to meet a few years ago, not only online but also in person when I was in California the last time. And his name is Mike Garut. Mike, thank you so much for coming back to our show. I know you're more
than
willing
Bonnie.
To do this for us every year, because women learn so much from you. Mike is the owner of a company called Linked Investigations, which is in Orange County, California. but he does servicing all around the country and around the world, I'm pretty sure at this point, as far as helping people with investigations when they feel they have a cheating spouse. Of course, there's other investigations you do too, but that's primarily our interest here, Mike. So that's why I thought we would talk about that. So can you tell us
a little bit
about about the work that you've been doing?
Sure. We've been busy lately, and thank you again for having me. It's good to talk to you, Bonnie. There's never a shortage of this type of work for private investigators, and there's a lot of private investigators out there that do this. Where I'm based, we're pretty busy in family law-related casework. It's not all of the exact same part of family law that you and I are generally talking about, but it's all definitely connected. The specific subject in your group of women and what they're going through, we work on those specific types of matters pretty regularly, and it's actually increasing. It's not decreasing. So I find that kind of interesting. But, yeah, just a lot of surveillance. I think before, when we spoke a few minutes before going on, I mentioned that over in the area where you're going to be in April, I've had a couple of different teams working at those hotels, catching these people, you know, with people they're not supposed to be with. So it just never fails.
A lot of times women are very anxious to hire a private investigator, but they would have no idea even how to go about that. And of course, I always recommend you because you have a very thorough knowledge of what our situation is about. But I've read some very interesting things on your blog. Mike has a wonderful blog. And to let women know that his website is linkedinvestigations.com. And on there, you'll see all kinds of different information. And on his blog, even though, you know, some of the articles are older, there's some very relevant articles on there. For instance, you have one about catching a cheating spouse. And you have a number of articles there. And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, what not to do when you think your partner is cheating, I think that's very relative for the women that are a part of this group because naturally when they come to me right away, you know, they're suspicious or else they have caught their husbands and they haven't told them yet, but they're really looking to confront them and they call me and they say, what's the best way to do it? And I always tell women very much something that you have on here that, you know, you just can't go and, you know, your best bet is to not go and confront your husband first. Think about this. Think about the steps because once you say something, once the words are spoken, then that person knows that you're looking at it. Is that correct?
That's something I underscore with clients on a regular basis. You know, in these situations, their relationships oftentimes get very contentious. There's a lot of sniping and snipping and comments back and forth when they have arguments about what's going on because the frustration is so high. And you're trying to, you know, it's a big mistake to think that by demanding or begging or getting to the bottom of the problem in order to get them to admit to it and then you can clean the slate and start over, I think that's wrong. I mean, it sounds great, but it doesn't work. And so I'm oftentimes asking these clients, I ask them what their intention are, what they're going to do, what usually, you know, once we find what's going on. And, of course, they're very emotional, and there's different emotions. They don't know whether to feel strong and empowered or break down and cry or both. But you're so right. One of the worst mistakes you can make is to, before it's time, confront the person or do something to show your hand. You know, that knowledge, knowing the truth, that you had to go out on your own through, say, a private investigator to find out, or if you stumbled across the information yourself through some means, that's very empowering, and it's very hurtful. But you should take a deep breath and think about what you're going to do. And if you're emotional and you find yourself crying around the person or acting very upset, you can always defer and say that that's because of some other reason. I strongly, strongly recommend against telling them what's up until the timing is right. And we can talk about when that is because I take that, you know, all the way with these clients too. So It's important not to go off too soon and show your hand, because they're going to build a story around it to defend their actions. They're going to turn it around on you if possible and say that you're prying or you're wrong or you're causing this problem, you're driving a wedge between them, you're crazy. All the things that are oftentimes said, and I'm sure these are ringing some bells right now with some of your listeners. So you're by breaking down and telling them what you're going to do or that you found this information out, you're giving them a heads up that they need to be more careful, that now that they know what you're capable of, and they're going to start closing bank accounts or moving assets, or they're going to get violent. You know, there's so many things. They might lawyer up and try to beat you to the punch in a divorce and claim that it's your fault, you know, with your friends and your, you know, employers or children or family. You know, there's so many things that come into play. And I discuss all this with people when they call me. With no obligation, it doesn't cost a penny to call and talk to me about this and ask, based on their situation, what I think they should do. And I'm happy to discuss that with them. And, you know, a lot of clients that are would-be clients, you know, we tell them their money's better spent with a good certified family law specialist and not a private investigator, because they already know what's going on and the marriage is clearly already broken. And instead of trying to find out the minutiae of how the watch works, just look at it, and if it's broken, you know, go get it fixed and do what you can.
Mike, I'd like to ask your opinion on something. There's an aspect of what I do that I really hadn't discussed too much with you. It came out from a group that I was part of for a while. It was called Man Readers, and it consisted of three other ladies plus myself. And we were all pretty good at picking out men with their different problems and dysfunctions. And, in fact, I have a book out called Man Readers, A Woman's Guide to Dysfunctional Men, which has nothing to do with this particular group that I'm, you know, heading, but it was another aspect of what I was doing. And a lot of times when I was doing publicity on this, it said, you know, people would always say to me, well, how do you know somebody's being unfaithful? And you know, I always tell women, first of all, to trust their instincts, but here are some of the other things that I mentioned. I'd just like to get your feedback on it. So okay. I said, you know, in the list that I had, a sudden change in appearance through exercise, clothing, haircuts, and cologne while having a decline in his attention for you. Would you agree with that?
100%, yep.
And how about a change in his sexual activity, a decrease or
definitely
increase or a change in sexual habits? Women assume that a sudden increase means that things are better, but often a man feels guilty for cheating, or he might feel you're suspicious and it will throw you off guard.
Well, I think that any of these reasons that we talk about, on any one of them may not necessarily mean that something's up, that's the worst thing that you're thinking. But of course it could mean that. When you have a combination of them, it looks a lot more stronger,
right,
and it's removing a lot more doubt. I mean, at some point, there's really nothing left, I mean, other than seeing it with your own eyes, which they would probably deny. But you're right. Their sexual behavior, and you make a great point, whether they're no longer interested or they're hyper-interested and they want to try new things, which I know you and I have heard this in this subject a lot, where they want to introduce new things that were never of interest seemingly before.
All
that's
right,
because they're
mm-hmm
doing that with somebody else. And so, yeah, it goes up and down. Some people get more into sex because they're it's like an addiction where they are when they're getting sex from multiple sources, it heightens their drive even with their stay-home partner. And then, of
uh-huh
course, you have the other. If somebody falls in love with somebody else, then they might lose interest in the sexual intimacy of their at-home relationship. And that's another thing where you get real attitude changes, because really you're an impediment to their fun and games and where they really want to go. You're no longer the person that they focus their affections on. You're no longer important to them in that regard. They might still care for you, but you're basically in the way. And I see this all the time.
And I think that's where a lot of the
resentment
comes in, especially in our marriages, you know, as far as having a gay husband. You know, they're able to pretend for a certain amount of time, but then they meet someone who, of course, is a gay man, and that's who they want to be with. And
Right.
you are in the way. They feel like you're holding the key to the prison because you're stopping them from having their happiness, even though they married you and didn't tell you what the situation is. But once they meet somebody, and I guess it's the same with straight couples also, when you fall in love with somebody else, the person who you're with is an impediment, and then you can very often have abuse towards that person. Have you found that?
Definitely. Yeah, and in most cases. And actually, in heterosexual relationships, when the wife is having the affair, if they fall in love with the other person, they seem to become very detached from the family unit. And when men
uh-huh.
do, they usually just, it's almost like it's more of a physical thing. And I think this is old information that we all already know, but it really seems to ring true pretty often. Nothing's absolute, but the men seem to be more fixated on the physicality of it, where the women get more emotionally involved. And so
uh-huh.
men can stay in a relationship and still get their gratification from multiple sources, where a woman, generally in my experience, seems to change the way she feels about what she's got at home and why she's unhappy, and she gravitates into another love, if you will. But that
uh-huh.
happens with everybody. I just see a little bit of a pattern there, where
uh-huh.
men, it always baffles me why people just don't come clean and say, you know, I want to go, I'm not happy. I understand there's a lot of reasons why people don't. But I think that you really owe that to your mate, even as painful as it is. Women can process that information and take that pain better than men. And I think
uh-huh.
that they can get that information, they can deal with it, and they can move on. But to keep somebody in the dark and make everybody's life miserable is not helping anyone.
Exactly. Especially if there's children involved, because they're the ones who are the brunt of the whole unhappiness, right?
Right, and they're learning from their example that's set before them. So
uh-huh.
I get it when people say, I'm staying together for the kids. I used to always say, well, that's the worst thing because it's not helping the kids. I know in some
uh-huh.
situations, literally, it might be helping the kids because there's no other alternative for a while. But you can't just take that as your new reality and just live a life like that, because it sucks. And we, as far as we know, we're only here once. And you've got to make the best of it, and you've got to do the best for yourself. And if that means you've got to have some more hard knocks, at least this heavy weight is off your shoulders and you don't have to worry about what they're doing anymore. You can move on and, you know, and see better days.
Yes, I always feel, though, that children are really the losers in these dysfunctional marriages, because this is what their role model becomes, and they learn to accept this kind of behavior in a marriage, which is destructive. And whether it's a straight couple or a straight gay couple, when there's any kind of emotional abuse or physical or you know, just verbal abuse because the person's frustrated and unhappy and taking it out on the family, then I really don't see why somebody wants to keep that going. I just feel it's destructive for children to grow
up.
Yeah,
they're
in
just
that
so
kind of
codependent. People get very dependent. And they're so, it's almost like they give up and they're willing to accept this kind of a life
uh-huh.
for the scary alternative of the unknown of what's around the next corner. Am I going to be on the street? How can I function?
Yes, and that's a reality
otherwise
for a lot of people. And that's why I tell women that you have to have a plan. And, you know, you don't have to act immediately. You have to plan out things. You know, so many times women really get the short end of the stick in these particular marriages with a gay husband where,
mm-hmm.
you know, man now comes to terms with himself and now he's off in his new life and he forgets that he had an old life that he created and abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but getting back to this list, how about your man starts to find fault with you even though you're doing nothing differently? Criticizing you is a way for him to ease his guilt and make you take the blame for his unfaithfulness. Would you agree with that?
Definitely.
Okay, and constant checking on your schedule and what time you're going, doing things. Cheating men try to plan their extracurricular activities around times that you will not be around.
That's very true. Yeah, that's very true. But they also get suspicious, and they want to track you, not only so they can know when their times are available, but they start to think that you might be up to something too, because they're so
uh-huh.
toxic and fixed in what they're involved in that they assume that this is kind of how people are. And not everyone is that way, but I see that a lot. I see people that are really accusatory of affairs when there's nothing going on at all with my client, and my client's devastated and they need to know what's going on. They need to know the truth. I think back to your point about, you know, if somebody can find out the truth of what's going on, and then just, you know, you can have an outlet for your emotional distress and your planning ahead with counseling or an attorney, for instance, without having to go to the person who's doing this to you. And you can find out what's going on, and it's so empowering to know that, no, it's not your imagination. It wasn't your imagination. You're not crazy. And knowing that should be empowering enough to get you through to work on things and keep quiet about it and start to plan what you can do. And I think just knowing the truth so it's not in your imagination and it's not just driving you nuts, because they're never going to come clean. Oh, there's probably 6 or 7 out of 100 are going to come clean about it. And that's about it, in my opinion. I mean, most people don't come clean. And if you catch them red-handed, I mean, if you really got the video and you really nail them, then they still turn it around and blame it on you anyway. So that's part of the personality dysfunction with people that are up to no good, and they're, you know, they have a lack of respect for their own mate. So I think it's very empowering to learn the truth, keep it to your, from that. Don't tell them that you know the truth necessarily yet. And go find out what you can do, what your rights are, and start planning. And then when you're ready, give it all at once. Let them, you know, most of my clients let the other person know that they caught them when I serve them their divorce papers.
And I think that's great, because giving any advance notice just really throws somebody into a different mindset where they're really watching everything they're doing. And they know that you're on to them. And this has been a big problem for women who jump too fast. You know, I have women in our group who I feel are, they could really work for you, Mike. They are such great detectives. I mean, they do things that are amazing. Like a few of our women have entered male chat rooms, you know, male websites, created profiles. And that's how they find their husbands on there. You know, one woman was even texting or on the computer with her husband. He was in another room, she was in a room, and he thought she was a man, you know, totally different personality, and she was recording everything. And
wow.
I think it's wonderful when women are able to do this. We've had several of them who learned how to do this, go into these other dating sites and catch the men. They know what they're looking for, and then they use that as evidence, you know, against them, which I think that having as much proof as you can is always in your benefit. Do you agree with that?
Yes and no. I know that in some states, few states, they're a fault state. So if you can prove infidelity or, you know, something of that nature, that definitely has an effect on the outcome of a divorce, a favorable effect on the person who's got that information. In states like California, it has absolutely no effect in the courtroom. Doesn't matter. You can get divorced if you don't like their shoelaces. You don't need a reason, and infidelity doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the divorce or a settlement. But where it does matter is when you do have that proof. First of all, it's empowering to the point that you know the truth, regardless of what the liar is telling you. You know the truth. So that's number one for me. Secondly, if you have that evidence and it's irrefutable evidence, you got them, then that's very good as far as a negotiating point where you say, look, we can make this easy. And if, you know, if you don't try to, you know, run me over the coals and take advantage of me here, then fine. You can go do your thing and I'm going to do my thing. But I'm not going to let you walk over me. And if you want to make it hard, that's fine. I can play hardball. I'm prepared for that. And, you know, all these people that you're trying to shield this from, that you're berating me in front of, now they're going to know the truth too. So that kind of stuff can be very empowering for those reasons. Usually it doesn't help in the courtroom. But it can help you out of the courtroom in negotiations in a divorce, though. It doesn't have to
Absolutely.
Be, you know, in
I
front
always
of a
tell
judge.
That to women, even if you're in a no-fault state, first of all, you can utilize that information because, especially in our situation, most men don't want people knowing, you know, about their past or even necessarily their present. And if you can say, look, you want to do that? Well, I have a magazine that's waiting to hear an article from me on why my marriage didn't work, and I'm happy to give them the details and the proof. do whatever you have to make sure you can equalize neutral grounds and come out ahead, not behind. Or even if it's a matter, you know, I hate when men who go through this and they're holding like the bag over their wife's head, you know, blackmail bag. I don't want anybody knowing this. Don't tell anybody. If you do, I'm going to take away the house. I'm going to take away the kids. I'm going to do this or that. It's not your business to tell. You know, first of all, how come you can go and tell whoever you want and be living that life, and yet you have to keep the women in your closet that you've now jumped out of and you're pushing them back into it?
Well, you know, when you're dealing with a narcissist or a controlling person, uh-huh, personality, they say that kind of stuff, and it works. They wouldn't say it. They say it a lot. You know, you're never going to see the kids again. You're going to lose the house.
Uh-huh.
You're toast. All these things. And those are all things that, because they're so insecure and they're so scared, that they're throwing these threats out there, and they usually work because, you know, they have a much more intimidating personality. And, you know, it's for everything that they care about, too. They don't want you to, you know, change their little fantasy world. So that's,
uh-huh,
another reason why you've got to be completely prepared. And something else that breaks my heart, quite frankly, for a lot of clients is they do all their homework. They do everything. They get through the toughest part. They file. And because they've got the guy under a barrel, I mean, they've really, their divorce is going to, it's already laid out. Everything's been spelled out. And they've got a really strong case. And the reality check now comes where the guy's like, oh, my God. I mean, I don't want to have to deal with this. And so he goes to her. He breaks down crying and crocodile tears and begging. And it works. You know, they cancel the divorce. They put everything on hold. And they're going to give him another chance. And then the guy snaps out of it about 6 months later when the signs are all surfaced and he doesn't care anymore. Guess what? Everything's been changed now that you could have had gone favorable. Now things are gone, you know, like personal assets and liquid assets and all kinds of things can happen. And then they'll divorce you on their terms. And it's a real sad situation when you've done all this, you've gone through as much as you have, and you're prepared, but then you listen to this person who's been deceiving you for how many years? They've been doing this to you for so long, but you want so bad for that not to be true that you're willing,
uh-huh,
to just throw it all away and give them another chance. Here we go again. And, you know, if you want to be their friend, divorce them and then be their friend, if that's really what you want. Because I'll tell you what, you'll see the claws come out when they don't get their way. But they can't manhandle a good attorney in the courtroom. That doesn't work. And I think they know that, and so that's the reality check. And you know what? I hear these clients that do it that way, by the book. They are so happy. And in the end, it's not so bad for anybody, but they just stopped getting walked on, and that's what's important.
I know, and unfortunately, I'm dealing with women who are very vulnerable and good-hearted and loving and wanting to believe the best in a bad situation, hoping against hope. You know, they're not educated enough because there's so much misinformation about sexuality, and especially today where you see so many people talking about fluidity. That, yes, you can be this, you can be that, you can be everything, you can change, you can, you know. And they buy into these stories that, okay, I had a moment of weakness, that it was a fantasy that I acted on, I was drunk. I'm sure you hear all of these stories too, Mike. And that,
oh,
you
yeah,
know, I promise it's never going to happen again. And it's what I call the second honeymoon phase, where here you had lost everything, and then he comes running back to you a week or two later saying, I made a mistake. I'm really not that way. I really realize how much my family means to me. That's nothing. That's just a sexual act. Please give me a chance, honey. Please, please, please take me back. Take me back. And, you know, so many of our women weaken. Yeah, that's right. I'm raising my hand, too. I did that one time, you know, because I didn't want to break up my family. I was hoping it was just a bad mistake. I was hoping that my ex-husband, you know, just had a moment of weakness, like he said, and that it would never happen again. And so then they're so wonderful to you for the first few weeks or a couple of months because
mm-hmm. And
now
then
they're
resent
back where
you.
They want to
then
be.
They resent you more. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. But then it goes, I always tell women it's back to abnormal. You know, it'll be back
yep.
there within a very short amount of time. That be expecting it. If you want to have your second honeymoon, fine, but it's going to be over soon. And I can't judge anybody because I've done it myself. And sometimes you just have to get smacked
yeah.
down that second time to do it, to realize that.
That's true.
Right?
And but what's sad about that though is that usually that SmackDown is real bad. In other words, say you were gonna do okay or almost do okay in the first scenario if you are able to kind of turn it around and have some of the control in your favor for a change. When you give that up and give that second chance, now your situation is going to be worse most of the time. And so that's sad. And you're right. It's really tough because you love the person. You want it to be right. These women that you're talking about, they're wonderful people. They're sweethearts. They wanted to be in it for life and, have the fairy tale marriage. And we all know it's not a fairy tale, but you know what I mean. Have a good, happy, healthy marriage and go through all the ups and downs. So you can't fault somebody for wanting to make it work. But, some of my clients have done this. They have everything ready to go to serve the person. And then they go to them and they have that talk, the talk that they desperately want to have. And based on how that talk goes, without the person knowing that there's a set of divorce papers ready to be served, if they thumb their nose at you and they disrespect you, and here we go with the mood swing again, and they're just not cool at all, maybe when they wake up the next morning and they go out the door to go to work, that's when they get served. Because you did give them that one last chance. Because at least under those circumstances, they didn't know that they were going to get a divorce. So maybe something like that might be feasible for some situations. But you've really got to be careful because once after they're caught, just like a bank robber, right? You catch a bank robber for robbing a bank and they're arrested, they're in jail. And they say, well, I'll give the money back. What can I do to make this right? You know what? You already robbed the bank. You're busted. It doesn't matter if you give the money back. And so if somebody's been doing this to you for so long and, all the secrecy and hiding the cell phones and tracking, so many people are tracking each other now. Just as many people that are cheating are tracking their spouses for the reasons that you mentioned to try to make sure that they're not where they don't want them to be anywhere in the proximity so they can cheat or do whatever. But they track their mates and the person who's the victim in the relationship is tracking them, and that's crazy making. I mean, a lot of this stuff starts to make you crazy. You can't get so into it and try so hard to ferret out every single little detail and figure out the minutiae of all this stuff. It's like, wait a minute, let's take a step back. If it's broken and they're doing this stuff, I understand if you need some proof. There's ways to get the proof that are not that difficult. And if it is what it is, then you can move forward and go to the next step. And I see people get kind of locked in, multiple years of this unhealthy spying on each other and this, it's just no way to live. And you can find
No, it's not.
happiness. You don't have to stay in a toxic relationship. There's just no reason.
Mike, when I was writing this book, part of it, a few facts from it, this is long before I met you, and it's really funny because so many of the things that you've stated on the show before falls into this. Because not everybody can afford to have a private detective, as you know, and you've been very generous as far as giving advice. So here are some of the things I had written in the book. Tell me if you agree with these. This book is 10 years old, so tell me if it's still relevant. But
Oh,
going
you know
through
what?
his
The ground
wild
rules don't change.
okay. Going through his wallet and clothes, looking for receipts, matchbooks, and phone numbers. Men get careless and leave clues behind that way. Check ATM receipts for time and date. This could help you determine if your man was out when he claimed to be working. If your man withdraws from a bank branch, the location's usually printed on there. This could help tell where he was at that time. If he says he's working overtime, make sure to check his paycheck and look for overtime hours to match the dates that he was late. Check your credit card statements very carefully for signs of dinners out, motels or hotels, and even car rentals. Look through your partner's mobile phone book, missed calls, outgoing and received calls. If he's hiding his phone from you, that is a problem. Install spyware on your computer to check every key typed. For less than $100, you can download a package onto your computer and find out everything from his password to his emails. And the most important key to catching your man cheating is to act like you are completely oblivious to the fact that something is wrong. He will let his guard down, and then you can either hire a private eye or follow him yourself. Would you say those were some good ways?
Yeah, that's all good stuff. I like those, and it's funny how it's timeless because it's the same. Some new things are always going to pop up that are going to be either another sneaky thing that people do to get away with things. I mean, all these programs and text messaging programs that delete the messages right after you send them or shortly after you send them so nobody can find them, and all this stuff. Once people educate themselves on how to cheat and get away with it, it gets more and more and more difficult to catch them. One thing that I think you and I have talked about before that you didn't mention just now, but in people's telephone name history, of course they'll put some bogus name under there for somebody that's their significant other. So I might, if I'm dating Jennifer, I might put Johnny for that name. And it looks like I'm calling Johnny all the time. Well, all you got to do is call that number and see who answers. It's not always that simple, but people do that all the time. They'll put women put their girl a girlfriend's name, and they're really that's a guy that they know, and vice versa. So those little things. I mean, if you're in a situation like this, and the caveat, if you're in a healthy, happy relationship, none of these things even come up. Sometimes you get blindsided. And you might see something that you had no idea something was going on, and that's usually something falls into your lap. And hopefully you're paying attention when that day comes. You don't have to be hypersensitive or sneaky or anything, but if you see something that doesn't seem right, you might want to think about that for a few minutes and either address it with the person or keep it to yourself. And maybe do some checking on your own for a little while to either make sure that was no big deal, that was okay, or if there's a pattern there and that was just the tip of the iceberg where you start falling into a lot more information. People find information all the time through reading through text messages and old emails. You look in the trash after emails have been deleted, they're usually in the trash bin that nobody empties on time. But if you ever confront your spouse about any of this stuff, now their phone's going to be locked all the time. They're going to sleep with it next to their bed. They're going to be much more cautious. They're going to do damage control, and that's going to make it that much more difficult. And now you've set the standard where they know that you're looking. So you don't want to confront them. And I know probably myself and you and everybody else that's listening has done what I'm saying we shouldn't do. But the point is, if you can not confront them at everything that doesn't seem right, you probably get down to the bottom of things actually a lot faster. But you have to weigh the benefits when you think that way, because an otherwise very healthy relationship, you should be able to have open communication and so on and so forth. Now, you can try that, and if you don't like the answers, you don't have to make a big deal, like you said. Kind of just go on and act like, oh, okay, and then think, okay, that wasn't good. And then you can do a little bit of your own investigation. But you make a great point. The women don't need a PI to do 80% of what they probably could do, I suppose, to find out if something's up. But like I said, they can call a PI that's got the time to talk to them or make an appointment to talk to them for no consultation fee. And run some of this stuff by him. I mean, I've had so many people say, oh my God, I never thought of that. And how'd you know all these points? Oh my God, that's exactly what's going on. And I guarantee you, I've talked more people out of hiring me. I'm not the world's smartest businessman, out of hiring me, but I just tell them, like, you've laid out all these things. I mean, he's cheated before. He's done this before. The pattern's back again. You found this. You found these condoms. You found the Viagra. You found these things, and he's not using any of these things with you. And he's going on these business trips, and all these big red flags are there. You really don't need me other than to tell you, yep, if you want my opinion after doing this for 37 years, my opinion is he's dirty, and you got him, and you don't need to see what's happening under the sheets to know that it's happening.
Exactly. And that's what I tell women also. You have to trust your instincts. When they catch them with the condoms and the Viagra, they say, well, it's, and they say, what, we haven't had sex in 3 years. Well, yes, but I'm always thinking maybe the time will come when I'm not under such stress or I'm feeling better. My blood pressure isn't so high. They come up with the best excuses that you can possibly imagine. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about, Mike, is that I'm always amazed how, you know, services that you can provide for people, like the forensic background checks with the money. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. When you said forensics, my mind went right to something as a caveat here. The DNA stuff, you know, there's DNA labs on every corner now, basically. The people that you work with can send things out to DNA labs for testing. That's not very expensive, and they can tell you what the contents of the items that you supplied them are. So that's something else that can be done, and people do do it. I mean, we've solved some cases for paternity and the subjects that we're talking about right now, and with DNA lab testing. So that's a side note there. As far as the financial workup, you know, we can do national bank account searches. If you're in a situation where there's not a lot of, money in the marriage, then I don't recommend that because they're expensive. We're at the lower end of the scale for a quality bank search, but we charge $1,200 for a bank search. When I say bank search, that's a national search. It locates, you use the person's name and social security number, and you will find banks, the address of the bank branch where the account was opened. You don't get the account number, but you get the branch office where the account was opened, which is just about as good. And you find out the recent reported balance in the account and the recent transaction, whether it was a deposit or withdrawal. It covers checking and savings, and that's about it. And then if you're looking for hundreds of thousands of dollars or more, then it's a very good search to do because it can right off the bat, the accounts that you knew about, maybe you're just confirming that. But a lot of people, they find accounts that they had no idea existed, and they find a lot of money in those accounts. And if they're not disclosing that in their court documents when they're asked to disclose it, they might lose that money to you. So those kind of searches can be very valuable sometimes. And the same thing is done for pre-litigation investigations. If you've got a major case in a lawsuit, you know, sometimes they do bank account searches to find out if it's a waste of time to pursue someone if they don't have property or liquid assets. Our background check will show you, so that we cover the bank search. We also can do a security search for stocks and bonds. It's the same price. Those searches for banks and stocks and things, those take about 10 business days now to get the results back in. I use a outside vendor for that, and they're very good at what they do. Keep in mind, you might spend $1,200 and find $25. So it's not always, like I said, it's not always worth it. Our background check is...
I was going to say there are many of our women who come from substantially well-off types of families where their husbands have control of the money, and, you know, they claim there's nothing, but that's not necessarily the chance and the choice. You know, like I say, if they're a doctor or a lawyer, you know, there's money that's very likely to be hidden, correct?
Oh, yeah, and not just liquid assets or investments, but they have condominiums and apartments that they own and houses and land, and they share these, or they put it in the name of their significant other. They might have a crash pad. I've seen this so many times where these guys were following them around trying to find out where is this guy going every Thursday night for 4 hours. And he pulls up in a condominium development and the garage door goes up and he drives in and it goes down and he's in there for 4 hours and then he leaves. Like, well, who lives there? We run it. He owns it. But his wife never knew that he owned it. And then we stay there in the morning. We come back and we wait to see who comes out. And sure enough, some lady comes out. Sometimes there's a whole family living there and the guy's running two families. It's just unbelievable what people will do. So that would come up. We could do a specific property search, but I prefer to do a background check. The reason is it shows a lot of information all in one place. You get it. Our background checks take us about a day and a half to complete and get the information back to our clients. It costs $375, which is extremely reasonable compared to some of my associates that do the same work. For that, you get criminal records, you get civil records, lawsuits, tax liens, judgments, notices of default, bankruptcies, you know, all that kind of stuff. It'll also give you fictitious business names if they own companies, if they've got a an LLC or an S corporation, if they've got some company, or if it's current, or if it's suspended, or what the status of it is, who the corporate officers are of the company, that can be very telling. All this is the kind of stuff that you want to do before you let the cat out of the bag that you're done. You need to know all
Absolutely.
These things before you do anything outward, so you're prepared and you know that there's either nothing there that's findable or you found it already. And then once you have that answer, that'll help you move forward in a much more informed way. So that's our background check, and there's a lot more included in the background check than what I just mentioned. I mean, it includes phone numbers and emails and
it's wonderful.
Likely
it's
associates. Yeah, they're
I
they're
came
good.
To you
so
for help, Mike. I came to you for help with a background check, and it was really invaluable to me, the information that I needed on this person who was harassing me so terribly, if you recall. And,
I do.
You know, just having that kind of information is so empowering, you know, and so helpful. It really helped me move ahead with, you know, stopping the harassment. So
it's
really
funny
wonderful.
How people – go ahead, yeah.
No, I was just saying it's wonderful how you could do that.
Well, it's what I like is you have these people that like to operate in the shadows, whether they're fraudsters that rip people off in business on a regular basis and nobody ever gets them, and background checks can be so helpful. And we do locate searches and all this other stuff too. But when you find out this information and then you shine a bright light on what's going on and who these people really are, and you're so prepared. I mean, it's a game changer, big time game changer.
It totally is.
And that applies to what we're talking about, and it applies to other situations. And so, like I say, they can your people can probably find out most of what they need to know about what's wrong and what's going on. They're already living it. They just need to find some evidence. Sometimes we can be of assistance in that. If I think we can, I'll tell them. If I think that we can't, I'll tell them. But they can get a lot of that themselves. Some of this other stuff like background checks and, you know, surveillance. Surveillance is a little tricky. Some states you're not allowed to go do your own surveillance. Some states you are. I have people call me all the time that tell me they've been trying to do it on their own and they either got caught or they can't keep up. You know, it's different for everybody. But so there's some things that a PI has that are of value. And but like I say, I talk just as many people out of it. And I say, you know what, you've got more than enough. Here's what I think you should do. Go lay all this out with a good certified family law specialist. You don't want an ambulance chaser to represent you in your divorce. You need a divorce lawyer who's not cheap, who's not an arm and a leg, but who does a good job. And who understands it, and you give them a timeline. And I mean, there's a lot that you can do to make it work so well for yourself. And I think that spending your energy on that is a more of a spearheaded right direction thing for most everybody that's in these situations.
Mike, I know you're in California, but where else can you do investigations?
Well, it's interesting. That's a good question. They changed. We used to go all over the United States. I was flying all over the place. You know, it's funny. Sometimes people don't want to hire a PI in their town for specific reasons. They're afraid that they might know the person or, you know, different reasons. Or they hire us because it might begin in California and then go to other states, those kind of things. Some states have laws that prevent private investigators from other states coming into their state and doing surveillance. That's a relatively new concept. I don't have a list of the exacts, and quite frankly, I've never had a problem with that. We've traveled all around to different states and done different things. I mean, most of the time when we do our work, nobody's aware that we were ever there, even after we're long gone and the case is over. Our clients just benefited from our information. But if there's a problem where you're not allowed to do surveillance type work in another state, we can always partner up with the PI in that state where we actually physically work with them, or we work under their license, or if we need to, we can have them do some of the work for us. I'm not real big on farming work out because you don't have any control from my seat over what's going on out in the field. and I'm more disappointed with other PIs than I am impressed, quite honestly. So that's something that is just a personal thing on my part. As far as the computer-related searches, where we do background checks and bank searches and locates and all that, those are all national searches, and I do them all the time from where I am in California. It doesn't matter if I was in Maine or if I'm in Alaska or California, the service and the work and the results are identical. So it doesn't matter where your PI is located if you want him to do a background check or a locate search, as long as he knows the good databases to use. You know, we have to pay and get vetted by these places that don't just, it's not like an online search. Those are basically a joke compared. So if you know a good database to use, then it's dynamite. I mean, it's good stuff. And some of the rules change. Sometimes some of the information resources are taken out through new laws that come in, and then sometimes new ones are put back in or put in. So it's kind of always evolving one way or the other. I'm actually more of a proponent for privacy, but I'm in the business of uncovering secrets. So it's kind of a funny thing there, but oh well, that's what we do.
Well, that's good. Somebody has to be uncovering them, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I like helping people that are being taken advantage of in whatever the situation. That's why I enjoy it. I don't like to see people being cheated on and lied to or taken advantage of. By a lot of people are real bad. They'll do it, and they're brutal about it, and they'll do it to anyone many times. And sometimes it's just a misunderstanding, and you've got everywhere in between. And it's rewarding to me to be able to help people make a situation right and move on.
I was wondering, Mike, have you run into situations of men who are cheating with other men?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Several times.
I mean, it's something that's not that unusual anymore, correct?
Right, and that's what I was saying in the beginning of our call today, that it's getting more commonplace rather than less commonplace.
Mm-hmm. And I think we read more about it. We see more about it. It was interesting. We had a guest on last week. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, Donna Anderson. She's the founder of a group called lovefraud.com. And Donna has really, she's a specialist on sociopaths. And she has credit courses. You know, people can take for extra credits in college and stuff. She's really developed a wonderful network. But she was married to a sociopath who married her and took her for $500,000 at the same time that he was married to two other women. And,
wow.
You know, he's a big risk on top of it. But she started as a response to this whole movement. But, you know, she was mentioning on my show last week that men who are sociopaths, you know, they're always just looking for constant entertainment, the quick fix. You know, they'll have sex with women and men, even though they're not gay. You know, that they're having sex with men, because to them it's not an emotional thing. It's just a physical moment of just having a high. And I always tell women that it doesn't have to matter what the reason is. If somebody's doing something that is not what you signed up for, then it's time for you to say goodbye. You know,
exactly.
Whether you've not, you know, because today everybody has these classifications of asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, you know, metrosexual, you name all the sexuals. And there's so many of them. And I always say to women, it's so easy to me. Either you're straight or you're not. You know, anything outside the spectrum of straight is just not straight. You don't have to label yourself, but you don't have to live with it either. I mean, if that's not what you want, then you have to just say, I didn't sign up for this. This was not part of my agreement. It's not for better or worse, richer or poorer, sickness, health, straight or gay. You know, if you didn't put this, if this is not what you wanted, then you have to be strong enough to stand up and take your life back. But so many of
that's
these women,
I
think,
people.
Are beaten down, Mike.
I think,
you know, when you live in abusive situations, you lose who you are because you're always trying to fix something that can't be fixed. And you're running around like a chicken without your head just trying to make somebody happy who can never be happy with you. So
right.
You spend your whole life losing yourself just to try to please him. And that's why you just don't have that strength. I know that I was a very strong woman when I got married to my gay husband. I was a leader of a activist/militant type of group back in the 70s. You know, people were scared of me. You know, I was a strong woman, and I picked him because he was stronger than me. But that was a mistake. I mistook his strength for just being a bully. And, you know, he was stronger than me, and he was able to, like I always say, shout me down to shut me up so that I was afraid to speak up for myself. And I think a lot of our women are like that. They've lost who they are, and first they have to find themselves because these men just know how to keep doing it with these personality disorders. And a lot of them have personality disorders.
Oh, yeah. They have these mood swings, and usually as their secret starts to bubble up to the surface more and more, and it's like they just can't take it. They start to get angry at, like, flash mood swings. And you make a great point. It's not unusual at all where men can be extremely aggressive and, like you say, shout somebody down when they bring up those issues that are the most sensitive. Like, what were you doing last night? Why were you doing this? You know, why were you with her? Is something, or why were you with him? You know, whatever it is. And they really shut you down because that keeps you in your place where they need you to be. And, you know, once again, and so it's funny because even those kind of really super strong, intense personalities, when they do that, I can see how that would really have an effect on somebody. But if you are able to get it together and keep it to yourself and go seek some professional representation in the form of an attorney, you might have a big game changer on your hand. I mean, you get somebody who gets it. They know how to deal with these people. Most of the divorces that I've worked in, thousands of divorces, honestly, most of the divorces that we're working in, they're heterosexual, most of these cases that I work on, but the men are really on a power trip, and they really know how to take advantage of their wife. It's awful because these women are nice people. And they're taking advantage of them in this sense. So a good attorney can make a game changer out of it.
Absolutely.
You don't have to deal
with
them.
That's what you have to invest in, a good attorney. Mike, I just want to give people your information since you're so generous and contributing so much to people and helping them. So it'll be on this site in a few minutes once the show is over. Then I put it up, and I'll put it in my newsletter. But also for those who are listening and who will be listening this week until the information gets up later tonight, it's linkedinvestigations.com, LINKED, investigations.com. Mike has a wonderful website and a way to contact him on there, and you can send him a little note, and, you know, he'll be happy to get back to you. And, Mike, I can't thank you enough. The hour always goes so fast when you're the guest, and I always learn so much from you, and I really appreciate it. And I'm so excited that I'm going to get to see you again in this lifetime when I come out to California.
Well, thank you very much, and I feel the same way. Yeah, you're doing great work, and I appreciate you and what you're doing, and I'll look forward to seeing you again.
Thanks, Mike. So for all of our listeners, I hope you have a wonderful week. If you need Mike, you'll find his website again, linkedinvestigations.com. And to all of our listeners, I'll be back here next week. Love to all of you, and love to you, Mike. Thank you so much again.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, have
you
a good night,
guys don't put
everybody
up with it anymore. All right, bye-bye.
That's the final words of good advice, right?
Yeah. Don't
no,
put up with it
the
anymore.
No, that's true. The longer you stay with it, it doesn't get any better, correct?
No, it just becomes the norm, which is pitiful. It's such a beautiful day out right now.
The normal.
That's right.
Exactly. Go and enjoy it.
All right.
I'll be talking to you again soon, Mike. Take care. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.